what they wore in the valley. Indoors, a baby wore a napkin or diaper. Outdoors, in the dry season, nothing. Little children wore clothing only for protection from the sun or the cold, or as ornament. What they wore was sketchy, usually cut down from somebody else's clothes, or old bed linen, or what have you. As they got older in their clear water and sprouting years, children generally put on some kind of modesty bit, a kilt or skirt, and they began to long for the kind of clothing adolescents wore. But if they put it on too soon, they would be ridiculed by their age-mates and scolded by their household and heimas. Having reached puberty, the young adolescent was given a ceremony in the heimas and a party at home, and a whole set of new clothes of a particular kind. The boys wore a heavy kilt to the knee of white buckskin or white cotton or dark wool, and a white cotton shirt, cut like a kurta, sometimes collared and cuffed. In cold weather, they might wear stockings and sandals, and in rough country, leather shoes. The girls wore a similar kilt or a gathered skirt, below the knee and above the ankle, of undyed cream, gray, or dark wool, an overblouse or shirt of white cotton, and stockings, sandals, or shoes, like the boys. Both boys and girls might wear a fitted vest. Coats and shawls and knitted sweaters for cold weather were of no prescribed style, but they were never dyed. No dye color was used in any of these clothes for people living on the coast. They were made with care and of good material, often by their wearers, anxious to have everything about them exactly right. The lack of color gave them an austere elegance. Young people living on the coast stood out in any valley crowd. After they took a sexual partner, came inland, young women and men often went on wearing the kilts and shirts of their time on the coast, but they dyed them or wore colors with them. As for the native costume of the valley, it is rather hard to describe because it varied so much according to time, place, and wearer. There were definitely styles, fashions. In wall paintings, one could see figures dressed in clothes of a quite different cut than any being currently worn. For both women and men, shirts, full-cut overshirts, belted and unbelted shifts, kilts, and rather loose trousers were among the options. Women sometimes added the gathered skirt. Underclothes were worn for warmth. Adults did not usually go naked in town, except men at the time of the moon dance, but everybody swam naked in the holding tanks, and in the household and at the summer house, older people often went about without clothes. Coats for cold weather were made of sheepskin with the fleece and of canvas, but people working outdoors in the rain often undressed rather than dressed for it, their theory being skin dries quick. The dancing clothes, costumes worn for the wakwa, were of course of conservative style and often of great beauty. The characteristic ceremonial garment was the sleeveless vest. Going down into the heimas for singing or socializing or teaching or anything else, people generally put on a short, unbuttoned vest of fine make and finely decorated, kept for this purpose both by individuals and in the heimas. And the men who danced the moon, and both male and female dancers of the summer, wine, and grass, wore magnificently ornate vests, some of them many generations old. The principal materials of clothing were wool, cotton, linen, and leather. Wool was entirely from valley sheep. The most prized wool came from the Chumo flocks and was spun in Chumo and Telinana. Cotton was raised in patches in the valley, but most of it came from the southern shores of the inland sea. Wine was sent down annually on the train to the port at Sed to be shipped in exchange for the cotton sent up from the south. See Trouble with the Cotton People. Flax was grown in the valley and more extensively north of the mountain in the Clear Lake region. It was bartered for with wine, olives, olive oil, lemons, and glassware, carried over the mountain on the train or by wagon and pack teams using the line as a road. Leather was made locally using hides of cows, horses, sheep, goats, deer, rabbits, moles, himpi, and other small animals. Birdskins were tanned for ceremonial wear, and feather robes and vests were made as great gifts to the heimas. Leather working was a very highly developed technology, and leathers of great variety were available for clothing, shoes, and other uses. Raw fibers were mostly treated and prepared at the town workshop or manufactory under the direction of the cloth art. An individual might take a shearing from the family sheep or a quantity of homegrown flax or cotton to the workshop to clean, card, and dye. Or a group might share the labor, or the individual or group might give the fleece or the bale to the cloth art to prepare. Much spinning was done on the powered machines at the workshop, and bulk weaving and broadloom was done on the big power looms by cloth art professionals. But most fine or ceremonial stuffs were homespun on wheels or with the drop spindle and woven at home. Wool was the great ceremonial material. It made the beautiful rugs of chumo and chukulmas and was knitted at home by men and women for stockings, shawls, and so on. Lindsay-Woolsey mixture was a favorite material for skirts, kilts, and trousers. Cotton and linen were also mixed for summer fabrics, both woven and knitted. The most prized material for everyday wear was cotton, and the technology was exquisitely refined. Cotton fabrics ranged from massive canvases through soft, heavy knits to gossamer voiles so fine they let the moonlight through. The tanning art looked after butchering, as well as the leather technologies of curing, tanning, and making harness, shoes, furnishings, clothing, etc. And the cloth art managed the preparation of raw fibers, including cleaning, carding, dyeing, and spinning. The technologies of fabric manufacture, including weaving and powered knitting, and the production of some items, stockings, sheets, blankets, rugs, that were made in quantity and stockpiled. Important elements of the economy of each town and the valley as a whole, the two arts worked closely together. The tanning was always outside town, along with the slaughterhouse, but finished leather was brought into the cloth art workshops to be made into shoes and clothing. Tanners and clothiers were, as a rule, solid, prosperous, respectable people who lived in the same house for generations and considered themselves with complacency as pillars of the community.